All right, everybody who had their copy gets a gold star. Okay, lesson number six. We need to start in this lesson looking back at a couple of things. First of all, if you go over to Genesis chapter, beginning in chapter 12, we find the call of Abraham. Okay? And in that call, and we've talked about this, you know, a gazillion times, not really a gazillion, but you understand my meaning. We talk about it all the time. God made a promise to Abraham. Okay? And in that promise, the real core of that whole promise was what? Anybody recall? Okay, through you or your seed, how many? All nations will be blessed, okay? Now, that promise that God gave to Abraham, and this is before what huge event took place? Anybody recall? This is before Israel became even a nation, okay? All right, this is before Isaac and Jacob and Joseph and the Israelites being in Egypt and then coming out. They went in as a family and came out as a nation, right? Abraham's promise was way before all of that took place, okay? In other words, it was before the law was given to the Israelites as a nation, right? Okay, now even before Abraham, if you go all the way back to the beginning, Genesis chapter 3, the fall of man, what do we find happening there? After Adam and Eve sinned, okay, did God make a promise? What did that promise involve? Yeah, the very first prophecy of the Messiah that would come and basically restore, reconcile the relationship of God to who? To man, to everyone, to mankind, okay? So basically the thing that we need to understand here as we begin looking at this, this particular lesson is the aspect of sharing the gospel and who we need to share that with. And sometimes, again, as we looked at earlier when we talked about with Philip, we were looking at the whole issue of the Samaritans. Well, here we're going to be looking at the whole issue of just Gentiles in general. Okay? But turn in your Bible to Deuteronomy chapter 7 for a moment. Okay? And let's note something here that, again, we need to keep in mind as we look at this aspect of taking the gospel to all men. Right? That was God's intention from the very beginning, all the way back in the Garden of Eden, from the promise to Abraham. God's intention was that salvation would be available to who? To all men, okay? Everybody. No, you know, didn't matter where you were from, who you were, it didn't matter. Salvation by God's design was intended for all men, okay? In Deuteronomy chapter 7, what we're seeing here is, this is part of, you know, the whole giving of the law and the whole circumstance, the situation. The Israelites came out of Egypt. From bondage in slavery in Egypt, they come out as a nation of people, and God gives them the law by which He intends for them to live under. Okay? Now, in the giving of that law, in chapter 7, one of the things that we read about is the preparations and what's going to happen as they go into the promised land. Right? And notice, let me get somebody, if you will, to read verses 1, and let's read down to verse 6. Okay, and just looking at those first six verses here, what are some of the significant things that God is telling the Israelite people about the folks that whose land they're getting ready to go into? Well, they actually will much, much later because of their own disobedience. But what does it tell us about these people here? What are some of the things? Okay, they're a much stronger people than the Israelites are, okay? What else? They don't obey God. What kinds of stuff are they doing? They've got idol worship. They're just, you know, they're basically just a debased people, right? Okay, what else? They're more numerous. Bunch more of them than there are of you. Don't do what? Don't mingle with them. Don't intermarry with them. Because if you do, they will lead you away from the Lord. And if that happens, then what does it say? Okay. And if they get taken away, what does he say there? What will happen? The Lord's anger will what? It will burn against you, right? Okay. And then, what does it say specifically in the last part, in there in verse 6, what does it say specifically about the Israelites as a nation? Okay, they were chosen, they were picked by God. For what? What are the distinguishing things that it says here about them? Do what? To be his people, but also to be what? A treasured people, a holy nation, right? What does the word holy refer to? We've talked about this lots and lots of times. Set apart. Okay? They are sanctified. They are set apart for what? For God's purpose. That's what the word holy basically means, okay? They are set apart, separated. And in this case, it refers specifically that they are separate from what? From all the rest of the people, right? So basically what's happening here is God is giving instructions to the Israelites that look, you're going to be a special people, okay? You are my treasured possession. You are holy or set apart from everybody else. And these other people that you're going to be going up against, they're basically wicked folks. Okay? Now, how do you suppose that those instructions and that information to the Israelites, how do you suppose that influenced their feelings and concepts towards Gentiles? Okay, look down on them. Why? Okay, all right, they're infidels. They're not chosen. That we're chosen and you're not. Okay? We're God's special people. We have God and you don't. Okay? And not only that, but you are to do what? You stay over there and, you know, keep yourselves in. We're going to stay over here. In other words, God's instructing them, you keep yourself separate from these folks. Right? Okay? So it's kind of this, we're better than everybody else. Okay? Because again, at this point, we only have two groups of people in the world, right? And those two groups of people are who? There's Jews and Gentiles. That's basically, and in terms of biblical concepts, that's basically what we have. Jews and Gentiles. If you're not a Jew, you're a Gentile. Okay? And in their mind, that is in the Jews' mind, you are basically, as Jesus said, you're an infidel. You're an evil person, and we're going to stay as far away from you as we possibly can. Okay? Those that we don't destroy. Right? Okay, so now we go through all of the history of the Israelites that take us from this point to the point where now we're at the time of Jesus, right? And Jesus is teaching, and we talked about this some when we were discussing the lesson on Philip. Philip went to the Samaritans. We discussed the whole issue, where the Samaritans come from and so forth. But Jesus is, you know, he's talking to Gentiles and he's, you know, intermingling with Samaritans and, you know, those kinds of things. That did not make Jesus very popular amongst the Jews, did it? Okay? All right? So the whole idea or concept of taking the gospel to the Gentiles, how did that set with the Jews? By the time we get to Acts chapter 10, all right, where are we with all of that? Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, not just some of the disciples, but probably most of the disciples, including Peter, who we're going to look at here in just a few moments, all right? As we talked about when we were looking at Philip, we saw, okay, it's kind of a, all right, yeah, it's uncomfortable, don't like this idea of sharing the gospel with Samaritans. But, you know, okay, they are, you know, our second cousins twice removed, all right? You know, they are at least related to us halfway, okay? So, all right, if we have to, we can, you know, we can share the gospel with Samaritans. But Gentiles, you know, y'all are familiar with, we had a lot of fun with this on our trip. Emma was, you know, she does this really good. Y'all heard the lady says, I ain't doing it. Y'all heard that? Oh, you got to go online and you visit YouTube, right? And this woman on there, she does these things. She talks about different things. And says, I ain't doing it. Mm-mm. Well, that's kind of, you know, how the Israelites would have been. Take the gospel to the Gentiles. Mm-mm. I ain't doing it. Nope. I ain't doing it. I'd rather, and she goes on to talk about something she'd rather do, some awful thing she'd rather do than to do whatever it is. And so the Israelites would be, I'd rather, you know, than to take the gospel to the Gentiles. That's not happening. Why? Yeah, because what? We are God's chosen people. Think about it this way. It was hard enough for Jews to accept the gospel. You know, at this particular time, most of the Jews had not accepted the gospel, right? And so now what you're doing is you're saying, okay, we've got a bunch of Jews who have accepted the gospel. All right, we've kind of let these Samaritans, we kind of opened the gates to them a little bit here. Now we got to go to the Gentiles? Okay. The reason I'm going over this is because I want you to really understand as best that you can how difficult this would have been for Jews to take the gospel to the Gentile world. Okay? You know, we have a lot of stuff, and we talked about, you know, with Philip, we have a lot of stuff going on today, a lot of racial tension and things of that nature. People don't like people because of the color of their skin, all those kind of things, which is absolutely ludicrous, especially for Christians to feel that way, think that way. Absolutely ludicrous, okay? But yet, when we see that kind of tension and those kinds of thoughts and feelings that people have that way, that doesn't even begin to compare how Jews felt about Gentiles. Okay? So again, this is a... To say it's a huge hurdle for Jews to get over is an understatement. Okay? It really, really was. So keep that in mind as we look at what's taking place here, beginning in Acts chapter 10. All right? We're going to look at the opening of the church and the gospel message to the Gentile world. And this part of it begins, two really significant things take place. First of all, we're told about a man by the name of Cornelius. Okay? Cornelius is a centurion in the Roman army. Okay, so a centurion had authority over 100 soldiers. Okay? Look at the description, and let me get somebody to read for me. Just verses 1 and 2. Okay, so what does it tell us about Cornelius just in these first two verses? What kind of a man is he? All right, we might call him a good man, but what specifically does it tell us he?
He feared God.
All right, he feared God. Okay, not only he, but who else? His whole family. Okay, they were God-fearing people, as we would say today, right? Okay, and what else does it tell us about him? He was a praying man, okay? But he prayed specifically to who? To God, okay? Not to the gods of the Roman Empire, but to God, okay? What else does it tell us that he did? He gave generously, okay? So here is a man, as Wes said, that we would just kind of look at and go, yeah, he was a good man. Okay? He's a good guy. And based on the philosophy that a lot of people have today about salvation, he should go to heaven, right? Right? Because, well, you know, that's what we say about people. Well, he was a good guy. Yeah, I know he went to heaven. And what have we said about that particular idea and philosophy? Yeah, not so. Heaven is not going to be filled with good people, right? What kind of people is heaven going to be filled with? Saved people. Okay, Chuck?
How did he learn about God? Were there some Jews that were faithful to what God wanted and taught him?
Must have been. You see, in the Roman world at that time, you have to understand that Rome was an occupying power in Judea, okay? So the Jews were, they were under the authority, and basically they were subject to whatever the Romans required of them. And they really couldn't do anything to oppose it. So in that kind of a scenario, if you have somebody within the power echelon that is good to the locals, how do you suppose that's going to be received? Say, probably a lot of relief. Okay, we got a good guy here. Let's treat him well, okay? Let's not antagonize him, kind of a thing. And so most likely, you know, because Cornelius was a good man, the Jews that he associated with or within his area of authority probably responded in a good way to him. Especially it says he gave to the poor, right? So they're going to be appreciative of that. And so, yeah, most likely there are some Jews who are, you know, this is a good guy. Let's talk to him about God. See how he responds. It's possible. It's very possible, yeah. Who knows? He could have been the one at the cross. We don't know that. But, you know, whatever was taking place, Cornelius was one who was observing the Jews, okay, in their daily life and so forth, and at some point, you know, he must have been impressed with what he saw with these people. Okay, and when you combine that with what appears to be his good nature and so forth, that kind of, I think Chuck just opened the door for him to be receptive to hear about God.
I think there were some true God-fearing Jews.
Yes.
That didn't just were legalistic, but live the law in love.
Yeah.
And he must have seen that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Which goes to some good Jews.
Yes, yes.
Talking about Jews, is he
absolutely.
People, and the other person.
Absolutely, absolutely. And one of them, by the way, was Paul, Saul of Tarsus, who was very sincere in his Judaism, in his faith. Okay? So whatever the way was that Cornelius came to hear about God, and he began to pray to God, and you know, he was someone who was, in a sense, the perfect candidate, right? Okay, but not by accident, right? Not by accident, chosen by God to be the one through which the door of the church would be open to the Gentiles. Okay, now. So, somebody read verse 3 down through, let's go down through verse 8, just the rest of that section there. Who's got it? Tom, go ahead.
One day at about 3 in the afternoon, he had a vision. He distinctly saw an angel of God who came to him and said, "Cornelius." Cornelius stared at him in fear. "What is it, Lord?" he asked. The angel answered, "Your prayers and gifts to the poor have come up as a memorial offering before God. Now send men to Joppa to bring back a man named Simon, who is called Peter. He is staying with Simon the Tanner, whose house is by the sea." The angel who spoke to him at dawn, Cornelius called two of his servants and a devout soldier, who was one of his attendants. He told him everything that had happened and sent them to Joppa.
Okay. So on your study guide, at the very top of the inside page, explain and express it, the man, okay? Looking at what are we told, what do we know about Cornelius? Notice the very first statement on here, and we talked about he was a devout man, he was God-fearing, he prayed to God, okay? He did all of those things, but what? He's lost. Okay? He is lost. Why is he still lost? He's praying to God. He's a devout man. Why is he still lost? We really need to make sure we understand this point here. His sins have not been washed away. He has not accepted Christ yet. All right, so what does that tell us about religious people in general today? Are there a lot of good people out there in the world? A lot of good religious people that are out there in the world? Okay? That are still lost? Because they haven't accepted Christ. Okay? So it's not enough to be a good person. It's not enough to take care of the poor. It's not enough to even pray and worship God, is it? Something else has got to take place. So we look at what kind of man Cornelius was, physically, emotionally, spiritually. We've talked about some of those qualities, right? He's obviously physically, he's a Roman soldier, okay? So he's going to be physically in top shape, right? Emotionally and spiritually, how would you categorize him there? Yeah. Okay, all right. Okay. Okay. All right. His heart was open. Yeah. Spiritually, he's someone who acknowledges God and is, you know, seeking God. He appears to be someone who wants to know God better. Okay. All right. Do you have a thought? Oh, you look like you were getting ready to say something. All right, okay. Look at the third thing there. What did Cornelius need from God? Okay. First of all, in the suggestions here, a couple of texts here. Chapter 11, verse 14. Somebody go over and look at that. Chapter 10, verse 22, and 11 and verse 13. When talking about the church, what did he need from the church? First of all, what did he need from God? What does it tell us in chapter 11 and verse 14? He needed salvation, right? And so in order to have that, what did he need from the church? Look at those other two texts. Yeah, he needed to hear the message, right? Okay? He needed the word shared with him, okay? So from God he needs salvation, and the church is the avenue by which he can gain that. That is by sharing the message with him. The message of salvation, right? Okay. We've talked already some about Cornelius' attitude toward God. And look at verse... The next question on how did he respond to God's command to send to Peter? I've always found this particular part very interesting. What are the things that he does here? Okay. But how quickly did he do that? Immediately. Okay. Immediately he sent some servants and one of his soldiers, his faithful soldiers. This soldier most likely was what kind of a person? Probably very like-minded to him. Again, understand, you know, in the Roman army, okay, they were charged with basically keeping law and order in the empire. And law and order included, when it came to worship, what? Roman citizens were expected to worship, first of all, Caesar, okay, and then all the other gods that the Romans had, okay? So, to say that I'm trying to seek or to find this one true God, would be easily perceived as being what?
Treason.
Yeah. Treason. In other words, Cornelius, if his superiors found out that he's kind of going Jewish, as maybe they might would have put it, okay? He could have been tried for treason and killed. But now he's got a devout soldier that he's able to send with these other servants to go and fetch Peter, right? What does that tell us? What more does that tell us about Cornelius? Okay, he's willing to share his faith with others, but also, what does that then require?
Obedience,
a lot of trust, because he's sharing this obviously with the soldiers that are under him, right? That's risky. That's risky. But apparently Cornelius, you know, he was probably well liked by his soldiers in terms of they trusted him and so forth. They respected him. That doesn't mean that all of his soldiers necessarily agreed with him and all this, but they apparently had enough respect and he trusted them enough that he could entrust this one soldier with this task that God himself had given to him. Judy? Okay, all right. Okay.
And so I think his trust in God and believing in God is what helped him to teach his soldiers or maybe other people that he came in contact with.
Okay. One of the things that's interesting to me about this part of the story is that how did Cornelius receive this information? Well, I mean, he had a vision, right? You know, this angel appeared to him in a vision. How many times do you suppose that had ever happened to Cornelius in his life? Probably this is the first time, right? And so, you know, this he has this vision, but yet after the vision, he immediately sends his servants and his soldier to go and get Peter. Okay.
You know, and this I think this is every Christian's reaction to first being in Christ.
Okay.
You want to give it to everybody. And I think Cornelius felt the same way.
All right.
He received that message, he knew I was right there.
Okay. But a vision? You know, it's kind of like, you know, I had this dream last night. And, you know, I'm still trying to figure this all out. And, you know, something like this has never happened before.
Don't get that from
Do what?
Don't get that from
yeah. Okay. Something different about this, isn't it?
And the angel told him that
his prayers
have been heard by God. So that had to be a giant impact.
Okay. Any of y'all ever had a vision from God? Anybody? I don't know what that's like. Okay? I mean, I feel like there's been times when the Holy Spirit has spoken to me in terms of not words that I could actually hear, but in that filling me and you know, I've told you this many times, the stuff I come up with sometimes that I'm teaching and preaching and so forth, it's like, that didn't come from me. All right? But I've never had a vision where, you know, I saw with my eyes an angel or what have you. I just got to tell you, if that happened to me, I'm not sure. It's like, okay, what just took place here? You know, what's did that really happen? See, it's been a little while since I took my medicine, my medication, so, you know, maybe it is, it may, you know, I'm not hallucinating, I don't think. What's, you know, I'm just saying that that's not an everyday occurrence that even people back then experienced. Right? Cornelius has this experience, this vision, the angel speaks to him, and he immediately responds. Immediately responds to God. That tells me a lot about the nature and the character of Cornelius. A couple more minutes that we have here. Looks at these last few questions here for us to consider. Is it possible that there are still God-fearing people who are yet lost today? Okay. Is it possible that there are still devout people willing to obey God who are yet lost? Okay. 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 I think that the nature of these questions is really designed for us to understand the concept that, yeah, there are a lot of good people in the world. There are a lot of good folks that go to church and they worship God, they believe in God and all that, but yet they're still lost. And the challenge for us is, do we recognize that where we're still willing to talk to folks like that to try to help them to be saved? Even though they're good people, even though they're devoted people, even though they pray to God, but they're still lost. Do we really recognize that those folks are lost? Chuck? Oh, yeah.
You know?
Absolutely.
A lot of people went to church as children and they're familiar with the concept and still believe in God, but they're just not faithful Christians.
Right.
And so sometimes they kind of fall into this category. They might even still pray, but they're not actively living their lives as Christians.
Right. Okay. All right. The next question here is one for us to really deeply consider, okay? Is there any devout, God-fearing person in your world, or as we talk about all the time, your Jerusalem, your Judea, your Samaria, who is praying to God for life? Is there anyone that you know that fits into that category? Someone in your Jerusalem, your Judea, who's looking for the good news? Okay?
There might be, but we don't know it yet.
Very well.
I mean, if we knew about it, we would probably be helping them, but there may well be people that we see every day that's in this category, and we don't know it because we haven't discussed that.
Okay? All right. What do we have to do to find out? Exactly. Exactly. They're out there. We just need to recognize and be willing to talk to folks. You see? To have the opportunity to find out those that are truly searching. There's a lot of folks out there who are content where they are. Okay? And I think we have to recognize that. But there's a lot of folks out there that are still searching. And so, yeah, we need to be willing to ask and to find out. All right. Chuck, finish us up.
Well, this we're talking about Cornelius, the Gentiles, and this divider. And when God chose
Gentiles,
there
right.
There is something there that God put, but the greatest thing about Christ is his ability to unite. That was a monumental thing to get the Gentiles and the Jews, those two sets of sheep in his pen,
right.
together, and to love one another. And only Christ can do it. And that's what this country is.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yes.
And his ability to unite the human race.
Yes.
That is our only goal.
Yeah. You know, and we'll talk more about this next week. We'll talk a little bit more in terms of, we're going to begin looking at Peter. All right, he's the next character in this, you know, in this drama that's unfolding here. But we need to understand, again, what God instructed the Israelites, as we read in Deuteronomy. And I want you to take some time and go and look at this whole thing. How does that fit into, as we talked about, the promise that God gave to Abraham and what God's plan and intention was? Where was the disconnect in all of that? Okay, so that's where I want to begin next week and looking at, because that's the barrier that Peter has to overcome. All right? Okay, thank you all very much.